talking about people not believing the elders. Do you think that the elders play a significant role with the class and the teachings, the teachings on the reserve? Do you feel that they would play a role in order to keep your class from dying out, or if people were to listen to them?
I feel like, yeah, I do feel that, like they do have a lot to offer, and yet no one's really picking up on it, though.
It's too bad. Do you feel like the craft is dying out? Do you feel like certain crafts are dying out, and which ones do you feel?
There's like no, I don't think there is anyone else who does leather. We do have some who do beadwork. And we've got a lady who's starting a craft store here now. She does quilts. She can do one in, I don't know, a couple of days. She's got turtle designs, and I think she did a Thunderbird one for the golf club right now. But her work is really, really good.
What can be maintained to preserve the craft work? To maintain it, and how would you preserve the craft work? I guess in a way you told me, like, part of it by teaching. That's one way.
Now, what would you like to see your reserve do to maintain the craft work, the respect for the elders? What kinds of things do you think would be needed for your reserve to do?
Well, I think there should be more involvement in the elders. Like, they have their meetings on Tuesday, and there's just them there. No one goes to see what they want or what their needs are, and they in turn don't really bother. Like, the school has a couple times had them doing sewing with the kids, which I thought was really good, but it's not ongoing. They have the seniors one place and the kids in another place. It's always separate. They're over here and the kids are there, and how can you build respect? Like, there's a lot of them that don't have grandmothers or, you know, older people around them. Not like before.
Do you feel that the elders are dying off a lot earlier than let's say generations ago, where they used to live to be 110, 100, or 90?
It seems like every one of our elders have sugar diabetes, or it seems that's what everybody around here dies from, and we never used to hear of it. Or everybody, it seemed like, lived forever.
Yeah.
Now our oldest ones are in. We're fortunate if we got anybody in our 80s. I think we've got one or two. But most of them are gone.
If you could, what would you do to bring together the young and the elders?
Or what I do now.
Okay. Well, and what is that?
Well, like, I work with I'm on culture and recreation. And I work with the ACW. And at times I try to set up sewing bees where the girls can come out and learn how to make a quilt. I usually try and do the tied ones because they lose interest real fast. And a lot of the ladies that are within ACW, they're quite old, and everything's got to be done, you know, in a certain way. And the kids get tired of, you know, no, you don't do that way, do it again. Like, when you were younger and you were taught that way, it was fine, but no one teaches their kids, you know, you do it this way, and if it's not right, you take it out and you do it again until you understand that. They don't do that anymore. It is the quickest way to get it done.
If you you're just told to take it out and redo it again, a lot of people sort of say, well, I don't really want to do it. But then if you're told, this is the way I was taught, I'm handing it down to you as the way I was taught, the way it was handed to me, and each stitch you sew on there is patience. And when you get older and you get married, your children will have their patience. You'll have the patience to bring up your children. And I think being taught that way would probably bring them closer too, and then at the same time they could be telling stories, which would maybe make them more interested. Take a break and have coffee and sit and talk, you know, have stories and let the elders talk to them. Because I found that that's how I learned.
But I find that our elders here, they don't feel they have anything to offer.
And then you tell the elders the opposite way of doing it. And you say, well, you've got a lot to offer these children. You've got a lot to offer. You've lived a long time. You've had more experience. There's stories that could have been told that they themselves had been told when they were kids.
Mm-hmm.
I know, like, at one point in my life, I was brought up with a lot of elderly people, so this is why I feel that way. Eh?
Mm-hmm.
And like, I can get discouraged, like I do. Well, you know, I was teaching beadwork at NAMA. I still am, but I get discouraged because there's only two people coming. But the only thing that makes a difference why I keep doing it is because these two people are elders. They're older than me.
Well, that was the reason that I kept on with beadwork. I'd have, when we first started, we had about 30 kids. And everybody was enthusiastic, and we only had three people working with them. And it's hard. You got kids fooling around. And then we had a little girl, she's must be 15, I think, now. No, she's 14. She'll be 15 this year. But when she started, she was only 4. And she was really, and I think she did this for me when she was 7. She had worked, and she can do really good beadwork. She sews. I used to kind of laugh at her because she was so involved in everything she did, and like she's from a one-parent family, and she wanted to have everything. And I remember her buying this dress. She fixed it over, and it looked really good when she finished. But I remember thinking, God, I said, I've never seen anybody with patience like that, and she can sew and. And, like, she didn't, at that time, her mom wasn't really involved in the things she did. But I think in a lot of ways, the girls have taught their mom. And, they're like, after a while, their mom came to do beadwork, too. And we had, like, one winter, we had quilting. And everybody just brought scraps, whatever we could find. And then, you know how them old quilts get all them old free balls on? We use them for linings, and it's like after a while they look so ugly you can never get the balls off of them. And we used to use them for lining, and we had a couple of boys come in and sew quilts too. Mm-hmm. And they keep saying, well, when are we going to do that again? But I haven't done anything like that for the last year. And
do you feel the future generation can benefit from the craft work or the beadwork that's being done today?
Yes. I find that, like, beadwork is expensive. And if you can't afford it, you've got to learn to do it yourself if you want it. And there are, you know, quite a few young girls who enjoy doing beadwork. But it all involves commitment. Nobody really, they want to do it, but they just won't take the time to do it.
What areas if you were to make a list of the things that are most important in Native culture to preserve, what would be at the head of your list? What would be the things that are most important?
The language and the crafts.
And out of those two, which would be the most important of those two?
The language.
Why?
I, it just gives you really good feelings to when you start to understand it, like the language itself. I laughed when I first started. I didn't figure I could ever remember anything. But there'll be times when I'm working around here that, and I remember some words. I'm laughing around here by myself. They probably think I'm kind of crazy. But it does make me feel really good when I can remember. There were just the odd things I did know before I started. And it was nothing really. But the language, I feel, is the most important.
Well, Betsy, do you know, can you give us the names of all the people you know of on this reserve who do any kind of craft work, any kind of cultural work at all, whether it be language or craft work or anything that you believe that really preserves?
Elston Sturgeon does carvings, like he whittles, and his boys do it too. This boat here he did, but even he doesn't think that that's really important, and I think they're just really neat.
Oh, yes.
And Audrey Wilson does beadwork a lot. She has the End of the Trail, I think, is really beautiful. And Alfred Birch, I think, still does like some whittling and carving. And his son does the same. And as I said, Yvonne, she started doing beadwork and sewing.
Yvonne Henry,
yeah. And Mary Peters does sewing, like hand sewing. Those, my quilts there I did. Mary did the ties on them. Or she said they're the last one she's going to do. And like one, the blue one is my son's and the pink one is my daughter's. I got 18 of them, so they've got 9 apiece. I split them. But they're really beautiful. And she does, like, the majority of the things she does is crazy quilt. And she's always quilting. She says she can't do nothing else. 289-9098. She lives just down the road here from me. And, well, Mary Sturgeon does everything. But she, like, I know she can do the sweetgrass. And I have a niece down the road here, Stephanie French and Celeste French. They do some beadwork, not a lot. They're both just high school girls.
Okay, with Mary Sturgeon, do you have a number on her?
289-5684.
And Stephanie?
264-9291.
And what's Stephanie's last name?
French. She doesn't have a lot of work, but she does do the work.
Mm-hmm. The reason why I'm saying that Stephanie is because there's a generation there again. Mm-hmm. What we're trying to do is get the generations from the eldest to the youngest.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know. So Stephanie does the beadwork.
Mm-hmm.
And Mary does?
Sweetgrass. She can do that black ash baskets too. And Crystal Kijigo can do really good beadwork. I don't know if she'd have anything at home though.
Where does Mary get her sweet grass? Does she have some growing near her? Yeah, she finds it here?
Yeah.
Okay, Crystal, what type of work does she do?
She does beadwork and sewing.
And what's her number?
I don't know. 5736, I think.
Is that a 289?
Uh-huh. 289. And Wanda Riley does sewing, like, and beadwork. She's made dresses, dance dress, and mostly, I think, fancy dance her girls do. They're just little, but she does a lot of sewing and beadwork.
Do you have a number on that?
289-5205.
You said you were doing the jingle dresses for your daughter.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I can come here one day and you can teach me. I was interested in doing one.
Mm-hmm.
But how I did mine is like the 1800 style, where it's got three rows of jingles on it, and it's straight with the sort of a half sleeve or not three-quarter sleeve. And that's older than the style that they have out now.
Mm-hmm.
And the style that they have out, I think it's the 1900s. So I would like to learn how to make one.
Yeah, we have worked on the cones itself. My niece went peeking, and she saw they were pop cans.
Yeah.
And we didn't know what it was. We were trying to get enough of the Copenhagen cases.
Oh yeah.
Some my girlfriend's dad in Six Nations had a bunch of them. All the pop cans that are tossed away anyhow.
What do you use? What part of the cans?
Just the flat piece, the round flat one, you know, the where it says the label on it.
I was thinking the other class, if you ask them to say, would be, you know, variety stores that sell
mm-hmm.
sell tins where people hang around and would drink them or.
Gina McGackie does beadwork too, but I don't know to what extent.
Who?
Gina McGackie, she used to be quite involved in it before, and she's helped with shawl making.
I think you got her name. Yeah, we do. Yeah. Do we? Is it
you're right.
MCGAHY
yep.
or something? Yeah, we got her name.
You're right.
And Kathy Kishigo?
No, that was one of the names I don't think we would
give. And yet I've heard her name before, and I'm not sure for what.
She's a CHR down here. And she's on education.
Oh yeah, I forgot to ask you. What other line of work are you doing besides beadwork to help Native people out? And tell us a little bit about it and how you got interested.
I do fry bread cooking and corn soup for different socials and things that go on a reserve. And I got into it because my sister wouldn't do it for me no more.
you were forced, eh?
She said, it's about time, because I'd always get her to do it. I'd make the bread, and she'd do the soup all the time. And then, she just told me, it's about time I learned myself.
Outside of the traditional
I work on a newsletter. I do typesetting and work in printing.
Mm-hmm. And how did you get interested in that?
Mm-hmm. We have a volunteer newsletter that somebody has to do, and I've been working on it for about 10 years off and on. And then my cousin has a printing place, and that's where I got into the printing.
Did you find it hard when you first started? Like, was it easy to learn or hard to learn?
The printing and that?
Mm-hmm.
No, really intriguing. It was like the creation and things that you could do. Where I just really enjoyed it. Like most jobs you go to, you try and get out of there as soon as you can, but with printing, it seems like the day is too short. I've never enjoyed, like, I enjoy doing this, and I've worked in different jobs, but I've never, it's not as much as I love doing, like, working with the letters, especially the, you know, the different letters and setting them, making up signs and posters and stuff.
Specialty would be what? The knit making or glove making? Is there, like, this is a release form. I think that will kind of finish now. I can't think of anything else. This is a release form. And you just sign your name here and print it out.
Sign it here?
You sign it, you sign here and print down here. And if you want anything, like we don't use everything that you said on the tape, you know, it's edited.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want any special restrictions, write it down here.
I'd have to hear it before I tell you what.
Oh, okay, well.
There'll be a chance in the fall, let's put together, for the people who have their words. And now some people are going to have both sections of their tape and their